Well, things are calmer on the southwest border for now that the flood of illegal immigrants has declined somewhat. Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson says the worst is over, at least for now. This comes after DHS Inspector General John Roth's investigation into alleged mistreatment of child immigrants at detention centers. The accusations were made by an advocacy group in June, and Inspector General Roth joins us now with more on details into that investigation. John, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining me. So tell us the background of what prompted this investigation in the first place. Some of the allegations by these advocacy groups were pretty lurid.
Well, yes, we had seen, obviously, as everyone else had, the surge on the border that was really an increase by an order of magnitude, and we were interested in seeing how the Border Patrol was able to handle that surge. At the same time, as you note in your introduction, the rights groups, including the ACLU, wrote us a letter with a formal complaint involving a number of instances of maltreatment of immigrant children who were not accompanied by adults. So obviously those were things that were of concern to us, and we decided to launch an investigation of that.
So just a clarification point here, the NIG, a department-level IG, can launch an investigation based on outside types of testimony or complaints?
Absolutely, and in fact we work a lot with different immigrant rights groups and civil liberties groups, privacy groups. When they bring something to our attention, we'll certainly take a look at it and see whether it's something that we ought to investigate.
All right, so before we get into the details of how you did the investigation, give us the top-line results. It seems like you found that you couldn't substantiate a lot of what they were telling you.
That's exactly right. We took a look at these, and we worked in partnership with the Internal Affairs units at Immigration and Customs Enforcement, as well as the Customs and Border Protection groups. They have their own internal affairs that is generally supervised by us. So we got together, took a look at the complaints, sort of divvied them up, with the Inspector General taking the most serious of them, and then went out and started to investigate these. And what we found is that we could not substantiate these, which is somewhat different than they didn't happen. It's just rather we just weren't able to get sufficient proof to make a case.
And how many, how large was the sample on which that you looked at initially?
We had a total of 116 complaints that the American Civil Liberties Union gave us, and then we received a number of complaints independently of that, and each of those then would get investigated either by us or by our partners at ICE or CBP.
And what was the nature of the alleged mistreatment that the ACLU and some of the other groups brought to your attention?
It ran the gamut. Some of it was basically conditions of confinement, that it was too crowded, it was too cold, it was too warm, the food was insufficient. There were also threats of force and actual the use of force in several instances that we had to investigate.
Well, I guess being too hot and too cold and the food not good enough could be the complaint in just about every office in the country.
Well, we don't want to minimize that, and certainly the Border Patrol had enormous challenges. Any time that you have, you know, your business line increased by tenfold, there are going to be logistics challenges. What we found, though, is that the Border Patrol adapted relatively quickly and was able to meet the surge.
And so how did you make your determination? Did you alert them that you were on the way down, or did you burst in unannounced? How did that all work?
Sure. Well, we did this in really in two ways. One was, of course, take a look at these complaints. But, you know, chasing after complaints after the fact is certainly one way to do it, but we thought it was important to be more proactive. So what we did starting in early July was to do random and unannounced visits to these facilities to see for ourselves exactly how the Border Patrol were handling these. And we had a search protocol, including a checklist to, you know, determine the kinds of conditions that we would find. We also did interviews not only with Border Patrol personnel but some of the children themselves to find out how they were treated. So it was really in two ways. One was investigating the complaints that we had, but more importantly, from my point of view, we were more proactive and we went down there just to see for ourselves what was going on.
And so give us an example of what you found. I think one of the places you went to was a place in Alabama, I believe it was?
It was mostly on the southwest border. I don't believe there's anything in Alabama. Mostly Texas, Arizona, and California. There were a total of...
New Mexico is where I meant
Mexico,
to say.
Yeah. Yes, Artesia, New Mexico, for example, there was a facility that not only housed families, basically. And, you know, they had significant challenges with sanitation, with, you know, those kinds of things, simply because of the differing cultures between sort of the immigrant families that were coming up and sort of what we're used to in sort of our day-to-day lives. And that was a challenge, keeping things clean to, you know, ensure that the sanitation was where it needed to be.
And had the internal affairs divisions of Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the Border Patrol, had they already been looking into this, or did they kind of wait for the IG from Washington to come down?
Well, we work in close coordination with them, so we essentially divided the work. They ultimately report to us as to their findings, and we take a look at them and ensure that they meet the standards that we would expect with regard to thoroughness and independence.
And I'm looking at your checklist. It's quite a long list. I mean, it's very, very thorough. Temperature control, emergency Medicare, drinking water, sink, even if they work, the sinks and toilets and so forth. Is the ventilation working? Is this the same checklist that they would use ordinarily for detaining immigrants?
Yes, it is. And it's really established by law. This isn't something that we invented, but rather we took the legal standards that the Border Patrol is supposed to use for these kinds of situations and essentially had a neutral, independent third party like the Inspector General take a look at it really in real time.
We're speaking with John Roth. He's the Inspector General of the Homeland Security Department. And what about the victims or the alleged victims, the children, the unaccompanied minors themselves? Did you speak with any of them?
Yes, we did. And I don't want to obviously speak about individual investigations, but as part of our investigative protocol, we will obviously always talk to the victim or the victim's representative to find out sort of their version of the facts and then try to work backward to see if we could substantiate any of them.
And you still have 100 to go yet, correct?
That's correct. I mean, total there is 116, so we're working through them. I think we're confident that we'll be able to get through them.
And even though you found that they were mostly, so far, unsubstantiated, do you nevertheless have recommendations for those two agencies responsible for this whole, treatment of the people and processing of them?
Yes. What we have put on our website are really interim reports of what we have found during our on-site visits. One of the things that we've done is as we see something that we think ought to be corrected, we don't wait. We simply suggest or direct that they fix the issue when we see it. But we'll also put together what we call an audit or an inspection report later on that will give sort of a more systemic look at the entire situation.
When we had one of the Border Patrol agent union representatives on about 6 weeks ago, that in the midst of this crisis, we got the picture of a group really trying to cope with something almost overwhelming, even to the point of agents making sandwiches at their homes and bringing them for some of the immigrant and donating clothing and toys and so forth. What's your impression of what the situation was? Was it something almost bordering on out of control?
I don't think it was ever bordering on out of control. I think your guest, your interviewee, had it about right. I mean, this was one in which there had to be a lot of improvisation going on, and we saw for ourselves that a lot of the Border Patrol folks would pay for food out of their own pocket or give toys out of their own pocket to these children to try to make it a little more palatable.
And what happened to all those unaccompanied minors that were on military bases being housed and so forth, and now DHS has pulled back from those facilities? Where'd they all go?
Well, under the law, DHS can only have them for 72 hours, and then they go into the care of Health and Human Services, who has set up a number of different facilities that they use and try to place these folks in foster homes or with relatives living in the United States. Ultimately, they will get an immigration hearing, and then the decision on their status will be made.
All right. Again, John Roth is the Inspector General of Homeland Security, and I want to switch gears here because you have another little bit more straightforward report out a couple of days later, and that is the Homeland Security having tens of millions of dollars of supplies for a pandemic response that are going stale kind of in the warehouses. What's going on there, and how did it all happen?
Well, we took a look at that, and this was, as you note, a more formal audit that DHS received. I think it was about $47 million in 2006 to purchase pandemic supplies. This was a special sort of authorization to purchase pandemic supplies because DHS workers are on the front lines every day, and if there is a pandemic, they're still going to have to come to work. We'll still have to have Border Patrol agents and TSA officers doing the work that they're supposed to be doing. And what we found was that the original purchases were flawed because there hadn't been any sort of thinking about what it is exactly that they needed. So, you know, we had instances in which there were a vast number of, for example, surgical masks. I think it was, the number was something like 16 million surgical masks, for which there was really no articulated need. Additionally, a lot of the antiviral medication that they purchased was sent out to the field without sufficient tracking, so they didn't really know where the medicines were at any one time. And then, as you note, these medicines expire, and, you know, according to the FDA guidelines, they'll expire next year. I will say that DHS is trying to get FDA approval for an extension of that, but that's not a guarantee.
So these were supplies that were to be used by DHS employees themselves in dealing with the public, so they would stay safe while they did what they had to do should there be a pandemic.
Correct.
So they weren't going to put surgical masks on citizens, they or give shots to citizens for antiviral. It was for themselves.
Right, because they'll have to work regardless of the exterior, you know, the situation out there. And in fact, you know, arguably, it's more important to have that kind of a DHS presence during a pandemic. So it was very important to be prepared for this kind of thing. And what we found was that, you know, there's work to be done.
Now, I know it's a big department, Homeland Security. It's got, you know, 160,000 employees or so.
225,000.
225, okay.
Last count, yeah.
It's a little bigger every time.
Yeah.
So 18 or 16 million masks seems like they must have found a really good bargain somewhere.
Yes, you know, as I said, you know, what they hadn't done and what we had recommended that they do in the future is take a look and really from a scientific and a medical point of view, figure out what it is that they need and make assurances that the things that they bought are things that they need. And what we found during our audit was that there was no justification for some of these purchases, which is not to say that, you know, some of that wasn't necessary. It's just impossible to tell as the result of our audits that anybody sort of thought this through at the time of the purchase.
Talking about the antiviral medication, does DHS have staff that is permitted or licensed, or what do you have to? What kind of certification do you have to be able to give somebody a shot in the arm of something like an antiviral medication, and knowing that it's the correct thing to do?
Right. That was sort of beyond the scope of our audit. We didn't really get into that. We were looking more at the sort of the tracking of it to determine whether or not they actually had the medications. I know that there are protocols in place for as to how that gets administered, but, you know, candidly, I don't know what that is.
Sure. And I guess I was surprised to find that Purell or whatever it was, the hand sanitizer, expires.
Yes, as it turns out, it does expire, and they purchased a significant quantity of that's expired. Just like respirators, TSA has a number of respirators that they've purchased that are beyond their effective date.
All right, so what is Homeland Security telling you they're going to do now with all this stuff? And
well, as we do in every audit, we made a number of specific recommendations. DHS has agreed with each of those recommendations, and we've basically, they're putting together a plan that they will submit to us within 90 days of the report, explaining exactly what they will do in response to it.
A week in the life of an IG. All right, John Roth is the Inspector General of Homeland Security. Thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure.